To Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you here. We're also pleased to have back here on the program with us Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Here with us once again to do the monthly program on home maintenance. And if you have heard the show before, you know how it goes. It's your opportunity to ask questions about all of the various parts of the single family home. Shutters and windows and roofs and basements and gutters and siding and doors and furnaces and air conditioning and anything else that you can possibly think of. If you have a problem and you need to fix it, you're not quite sure how to approach that, you can ask for some advice. Also, maybe you're just thinking about making some changes, doing some remodeling, whatever it happens to be. You can call in here, talk with Hank, and I know he'll do his best to help you out. So, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 is the number to call. We do also have a toll-free line. And that one is good. Anywhere that you can hear us, that's 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Those are the numbers. Thank you very much for being here.
Good to be back.
All right. Well, we get calls lined up here, and we're ready to go. We'll start with our line number four, and that's a caller in Mattoon. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
The last two windstorm events that have come through the area have shredded a number of shingles, pulled them right off of our roof. And I'm had an insurance adjuster come out and look at that. And basically the thought was I have a hip point roof, and the adjuster said that, you know, well, we'll replace the back side where the damage is, but not the others. Although she said that all the shingles showed signs of curling and cupping on the edges, but she said she couldn't justify that. The roof is 8 years old, is all, and I'm wondering if, you know, if the cupping part is something that maybe should get a second opinion on that. And I'm also kind of curious as to how and whether this cold anybody is going to get the shingles to seal down adequately to make it through the winter and more wind.
Well, it is going to be a problem. They do make Alaskan shingles that are designed to seal at much lower temperatures, but they aren't readily available here. Such a thing is available. One of the things that we can do that will help keep them on in case of windstorm is most of the time they are put on with four nails per shingle, and you can put them on with seven, and they tend to hang on a lot better that way. As far as the cupping and curling is concerned, that sounds as though you have a moisture problem in the attic.
Okay.
Because that is the usual cause of cupping and curling. It also can be a factory defect problem. Let's face it, we have talking about a product that wholesales for 5 cents a pound, and you think how much quality control do we get with it?
Right. Well, and this happens to be a company that a year and a half after we put the roof on disappeared, went under.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the other thing is I don't know whoever, whether I do it or someone else does it, we're going to play the Dickens trying to match those same shingles up with as far as the color and such.
Yeah, you probably won't match it absolutely, but you may not even if the same company was producing what they claim is the same shingle because there are considerable variations. 3M makes all of the granules for all of the manufacturers, but that doesn't mean that they will match, and particularly after some of them have sun faded, they're not going to match.
Sure. What can I do? How can I check then about the moisture in the attic? I mean, we have blown-in insulation as deep as the joists, and it appears to be dry when you go up into the attic.
Okay. The next time it gets really cold down below zero or down to zero or something like that, stick your head in the attic and look at the bottom of the roof sheathing and see if you have frost on it.
Okay.
If you do, then you have a problem that you need to do something about.
All righty. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. Now, is that I've sat here and listened enough you over the years to assume that the solution to a problem like that is attic ventilation? Is
basically, right? Yes. This is usually a combination of continuous ridge vent, continuous soffit vents, and perhaps some air chutes so that the air can move from the soffits into the attic area.
Mm-hmm. But ultimately now, though, that moisture, it's coming, it's evaporating up through the house. Does that mean that you may have some kind of a problem with getting the water, the rainwater away from around the house.
It may be that somebody is setting their power humidifier too high. Mm-hmm. And it's surprising how often that happens. This sort of thing, but yes, and we also need to seal where air may be leaking from the house into the attic. Usually this is a matter of where the plumbing vent pipes go through and things like this, or we need to get a can of foam and seal around them so that we don't have any air transfer.
Okay. Let's go next to St. Joe, and this is line number one. Hello.
Hi, Hank. Got a couple questions. First is, I've got some lichens on the north part of my roof. I know I can remove it with a mixture of bleach and water, but I don't know what the mix is.
Oh, well, probably one part of bleach to four parts of water will do it. You might also want to consider the possibility of keeping them from coming back by just spraying them with 2,4-D.
Okay.
That will oftentimes knock them down. It does the mosses anyway. I don't know whether you've got moss or lichens.
Okay, good. And the other thing is it a problem in doing it in cold weather, although without freezing, of course, temps above freezing?
No, I wouldn't think so. No.
Okay, good. Another question is, this past weekend I cut the tree down and I have a stump, and I just wonder if you had any suggestions for stump removal.
Well, I've gotten several bids recently because I have one to remove, too. And generally speaking, the people that come out with stump grinders that grind them into sawdust and then haul it away and put dirt back in, we're looking probably in the $200 to $250 range.
Yeah.
There used to be a product on the market back when we lost all the elm trees 30 years ago called Stump Fire, which was something you put on the stump, let it sit for a while, and then the thing would burn if you lit the thing, and it would burn out below ground level. I haven't seen or heard anything of it for 20 years.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, well, I heard about it, and the Extension had a pamphlet on it. I don't know whether it's still available. Yeah, and that's what I was going to try to do as opposed to grinding it out. Okay. And the other thing is, like the first caller, I've got some roof maintenance to do. Not now, probably waiting until warmer weather. But I've had a person suggest that on one part of my roof to be able to get up the pitch of the roof, to just nail a 2x4 for a foothold. And I was concerned about doing damage to the shingles in that approach as opposed to, say, a roof bracket or something like that.
Well, you can't just nail them through the roof.
Yeah.
Basically, what they usually do is take a piece of sheet metal, fasten it to the 2x4, and pull up a shingle enough so that you can nail it under a shingle. So when you take the sheet metal back out, the shingle covers it. Use a dab of roofing cement to hold it back down.
Got it. Okay. I didn't know about the first step about the sheet metal. Excellent. Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
All right,
okay.
Thank you. Next is Champagne, line number two. Hello.
Good morning. I was just wondering if you'd ever heard of a peculiar problem we ran into last summer. It's kind of a partial brownout. My wife called and said our washing machine wasn't working and the stove was on the fritz. It's a 240-volt electrical stove when I came, but the lights were on and so on. And when I got home, I found a 240-volt socket that we weren't using and measured the voltages across the various terminals, and one side had the normal 120 volts, and the other side had measured about 50 volts.
Hmm.
And I think what happened was that this was shortly after an electrical storm, and I think the transformer outside the house had been partially shorted out.
That's quite possible. The power dependability here is not great. This is why if you have a computer, you better have it on an uninterruptible power supply.
At any rate, we had problems with our basement and our upper floor where we had a brownout, our main floor, except for the socket that the dishwasher was plugged into, was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But our 240-volt appliance...
Yeah, well, you see, you've got... Your 240 volts comes from 220-volt
right.
circuits. And if one of those was down, you in the portion of the house that was served by that leg of the service would be down as well, in addition to your 240-volt thing. So you either had a bad connection or, as you indicated, you had a problem with the transformer.
It was eventually fixed after about a day. And I think it was the power company switched our circuit over to an unaffected transformer and eventually replaced the transformer. But that night we didn't have any air conditioning. You know, it was a hot one.
I can understand that. And strange things happen. We have various assorted things like squirrels getting across wires and so on. And the past month or so, we've been getting enough at my house, being enough of power blip to turn all the clocks off about 8 o'clock, about quarter to eight on Saturday morning every week.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. Our guest here this morning in this hour, Focus 580, Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. It's our regular monthly show on home maintenance. If you have a question, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Every Saturday morning?
For the last month, it's about every Saturday morning, about a quarter to eight, I get just enough blip, but don't really lose anything except the clocks. You have to go back and reset every clock in the house.
And it's strange. It would happen at the same time on the same
day. Yes, I know.
All right. Well, let's talk next to someone in Kankakee. That would be line number three. Line number three, Kankakee. Go ahead. Hello. I'm sorry. Monticello, line number line number three, Monticello. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Hi, Hank. I wanted to thank you, number one, for all the useful advice you've given me over the years, and I thought maybe I could contribute a bit of advice. Last month, someone was on, perhaps in your place, I'm not sure, and people were asking, as they always do, what can they do to keep the leaves out of the gutters? And we know the screens don't work if you live in a wooded area. And so the only alternative that people seem to know about is this helmet guard or gutter helmet. I went and priced them, and they're incredibly expensive.
Yes, they are.
But we found a product called Leaf Guard, and it's like only $2 a running foot instead of like 15.
Right.
And we put that on, and it's worked perfectly. We've been using it now for like 6 months.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to mention this because no one had heard of it, and we had to go up on the Internet and do a lot of looking, and there are people who can purchase it in town and put it up for you. In fact, it's easy to put up yourself. And when you had a guest, when you did your replacement last month, only mentioned gutter helmets. So I just wanted to tell people, because my neighbors put up their screens, and boy, they're still angry about that. That didn't work for them. And so there is now an alternative that's reasonably priced.
Well, there are about six of them. I have a list that I send out to people that inquire about it.
Okay, great.
And
thank you very much.
I agree. Gutter helmet is so ridiculously priced, I refuse to recommend it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's see. We'll go on. And then next, I think we'll talk with somebody on in Charleston, line number four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm redoing a bathroom, the floor in the bathroom. Took out the toilet and took up the vinyl flooring. And there'd obviously been a leak, I think, around the toilet seal. So I've got two layers of subflooring. The first was a kind of chipboard that was pretty much rotten. I took that out, and there's looks like maybe 3/4-inch plywood, the base layer. It's stained, but I think intact. It's not soft or anything. So my concern is, if I dry that out, is there something I should put on that to, kind of stop any mold from growing or things like that?
Once you eliminate the water leak, the mold goes away.
Okay, so I don't need to treat it with anything?
No.
Okay. And the other question is, when I took the first layer of subflooring off, there was looked like some paper or something between the two layers. Should I put something back down between those layers of
it was floor? Was it red or black?
Black.
Okay. It was just plain roofing felt. a 15-pound roofing felt. It's not a bad idea. It tends to reduce squeaks and things like this because you don't have two pieces of wood rubbing against each other.
Okay.
But it really shouldn't be necessary, but certainly doesn't hurt anything and is mighty cheap.
Okay, yeah. And, but you think then if, once the floor dries out, it should be okay to go ahead and put something back on it?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Let's go to line number one, and this is Champagne. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I have a son that bought an older house in Belleville, and he has a problem with the sewer in heavy rain season or storms. Sewer is actually backing up in his basement, and they tell him that that section of town has no storm sewers and that there's apparently nothing you can do. Is there any way of putting a check valve in that sewer line? In those?
There certainly is. There are a number of companies that make them that fit right into the floor drain that automatically block backflow.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
So you just need to get with your local plumbing supplier, and I'm sure they can come up with them.
Thank you very much.
All right, very good. Next is line two in Urbana. Hello.
Good morning, Hank. And I'd like to thank you also over the years for all these programs that you've had, incredibly useful and all the good advice.
Thank you.
Nice to hear you on the radio again. My neighbor and I have had a project coming up for improving the drainage between our houses. And the landscaper has suggested a closed system underground with all the downspouts and my sump pump tying into these pipes and eventually going from the back fence all the way to the discharging in the ditch near the road.
Mm-hmm.
But we were worried about whether it will get clogged up. And we're wondering what you think about a closed system like that, or whether you could recommend something else, maybe tell us what a French drain is, and so that we could have our downspouts going onto the surface into, so that we could know what was happening. And I'm worried about my sump pump backing up into the house if this underground system got clogged up.
Well, it certainly could happen. The main thing is the sump pump isn't going to clog it because anything that goes through the sump pump will go on through the tile. The main thing you have to do is get screens on your gutters where your gutter goes into the tile to make sure that you're not running leaves and assorted other crud down there.
So do the downspouts get blocked up at the point where they enter this?
Well, we're just trying to keep it from dumping things into that closed system.
Right.
So they make a unit that goes on top of sort of a very coarse screen that goes over the top of the tile where the downspout comes down so that nothing goes in to block it. Then you only have to worry about animals burrowing in and building nests in it from the end where it comes out in the road ditch.
Right, and you would never know about that until...
So the other option is to, rather than put in a closed system, is to put in a ditch that is filled with washed gravel.
Washed gravel.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to use crushed limestone because that will eventually dissolve.
Right.
And so if you use washed gravel, and then this will... You can walk across it and so on, and that will keep everything else out.
Mm-hmm. And what depth of a ditch, Hank?
Well, it depends on how much where your outfall is. In other words,
you mean the difference in height between the
where you're dumping it into the ditch and so on.
Right.
And then your big problem, as they say, is you have to screen it at all the entrances to keep the animals out. It's amazing how many critters we have that will be delighted to take up housekeeping in the tile.
So there would be a tile in this ditch?
Yes.
Does it have to be lined with plastic or?
It's probably a good idea. If you do dig the ditch, put in a sheet of plastic, and then put in one of the perforated plastic tiles,
mm-hmm.
and run it out, and then backfill with the washed gravel. This pretty much keeps everything out of it.
Right, and this the perforated tile, does it have to be covered with a membrane?
It's not a bad idea, but most of the time you don't have to.
Okay, so I'm not absolutely clear how the screens. Is it something that attaches to your downspout, or?
Well, usually it attaches to the pipe where it comes up, and the downspout goes into it. Basically, there's a series of slanted fins, so if anything bigger than water...
It's something that's designed specifically for this.
Yes.
Right. If you were having to choose against a completely sealed system and something that you could actually see, which one would you go for?
Well, it depends on how well you like the green lawn between your two houses.
We're not worried about that. We've never had green lawn really between.
Okay.
It's shielded from the sun and.
Yeah, I would probably go not with the closed system, but with the plastic lined trench with tile in the bottom and a gravel backfill.
Uh-huh. Is that what is called a French drain then?
No, a French drain is, instead of going into a road ditch, it just goes into a hole and is dependent upon it soaking into the ground.
Oh.
And with the soil that we have here, they may work well in France, but they don't in Champaign-Urbana.
No, with all that clay and stuff.
Right.
Well, what is this system called that you just told me about, this ditch with the washed gravel? Does it have a name or?
Well, I don't know that it does. I have gotten to the point where on my house I took all the gutters and downspouts off and just did this under the drip line off the edge of the roof.
Yes, I wish we could do that, but it's not possible. I'll just tell the landscaper what it is that we would like to have. And he's made a proposal for a closed system, and I'm just too nervous about it.
Okay. Well, if he has any questions... Have him call me at my business, and I'll try and give him additional information.
Thanks very much, Hank. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're just about at the midpoint here, and certainly we have time for many other questions. Our guest is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Once a month he's here. It's always on a Monday, and we talk about home maintenance. And if you have a question, you have a problem that needs to be solved, you're just not sure how to deal with it, you call in, and he will give you some advice. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And we will just keep on here. The next caller is in Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Hi. I tuned in as you were talking with somebody about an electrical issue, so hopefully this is not a redundant question. But I recently was looking at some new construction, a new home, and it was a price is right. It was a nice layout and everything. But then the developer said that it's an all-electric home.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, I mean, in the past I always had the impression that it was much more expensive. How would I go about evaluating?
Well, I don't know how much more expensive it is since the price of gas is going up. It used to be that an all-electric home was probably had twice the heating cost.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that big difference occurs anymore.
Mm-hmm. How would I compare? I mean, what would I go looking for? Is there a way of comparing electric rates versus, you know, gas rates? Or?
Well, you have to.
Or are there other factors that are just as important, like how it's insulated and?
Well, basically, the all-electric house should be very heavily insulated. For that matter, at this time, mm-hmm. all houses should be very heavily insulated.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make a difference. You have to look at the, in terms of what is it going to cost to heat it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to realize that 1 kilowatt hour of electricity mm-hmm. produces 3,415 BTUs of heat.
Okay.
We buy gas by the therm. Mm-hmm. And that is 100,000 BTUs. The therm is 100,000 BTUs. Now, the gas, the maximum efficiency that you're going to get out of a gas system is about 92%.
Okay.
The electric is 100%.
Oh, okay. Okay, so...
Now, it depends if they are going to electric resistance heating, it's going to be more expensive. If they are going to... an underground, a ground loop heat pump, it probably will be cheaper to heat with the heat pump than it will be with gas.
Now, when you say resistance, I don't know what that is. Is it like just a forced air?
No, the either an electric furnace or electric baseboards.
Okay, it has a furnace.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Electric furnace is, as I say, 100% efficient, but it's relatively expensive.
Okay.
The heat pump, ground loop heat pump system is actually about 250% efficient.
Yeah.
Because it is extracting some of its heat from the ground rather than generating it with the electricity.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Basically, it's an air conditioner that works backwards.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Is that something you can install retro-wise?
It can be, but generally speaking, it's fairly expensive because we have to get a constant source, which means we have a couple of hundred feet of five-foot deep trench or a couple of wells that go down 100 feet or so to pick up the heat from the ground.
Yeah. All right. Okay. 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 So I could presumably get electric records and compare it against the gas rates to get a kind of idea.
Yeah, in other words, one therm of gas effectively will give you about 920,000 BTUs, whereas...
900? Oh, I thought you said 1,000.
Well, yeah, but I'm taking to the fact that you've got to have a lack of efficiency in the furnace.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I'm factoring that in, too.
Okay.
And as I say, the electricity produces 3,415 BTUs per kilowatt hour.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, but it's 100%.
At 100%.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Let's go on here. Next is Champagne. We have a couple of Champagne people. First line number one. Hello.
Hi. While I was on hold, this is my secondary question. Sump pump outlets, is there anything that you should put over the end of it? We have one that goes into our backyard. Should we put something over the end of that to screen it, to keep creatures out of it?
Probably wouldn't be a bad idea, a piece of hardware cloth or something like that, a quarter or half-inch mesh hardware cloth over the end will tend to keep rodents out.
With just like a radiator-type clamp or something? Or
yes, that would work fine.
Okay. My original question was, with anticipated energy costs soaring this year, what, in kind of a nutshell, is the best thing to do to, if you're just starting with energy proofing a house, what's the biggest payback? And in terms of furnaces and efficiency, at what point does it pay to replace one? At 15 years, at 20 years, or what's kind of the rule of thumb?
Well, this varies all over the place. If you have an air conditioner that's more than 10 years old, throw it away.
Wow.
Because we have literally doubled the efficiency of air conditioners in the last 10 years.
Okay.
You buy them, they are rated by SEER, and that is basically BTUs of cooling per watt of electricity. Something that's more than 10 years old probably is producing 6. As of next January 1, 4 weeks away, they are not permitted to manufacture anything that is less than 13.
Wow.
So you can see there's a very substantial difference. I did on my own house. I threw away an operating air conditioner simply because I could reduce my heat operating cost by half by replacing it.
Okay.
The easiest thing to do is to check your insulation. How much insulation do you have in the attic?
I don't know off the top.
Okay. You should be having at least R35 to 40, which translates to somewhere between 9 and 12 inches.
Okay.
And that's relatively cheap to add.
And you can just keep rolling new layers on top?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, you can probably have it blown in cheaper than you can go down to the big box stores and buy it and do it yourself.
And that's just as good as doing it the other way?
Yes.
Okay.
Huh. Matter of fact, it may be better because bat-type insulation, you always have a certain amount of heat loss around the edges of the bats, and the blown-in insulation covers everything.
Okay. How about sidewalls or windows if you're unsure what's in the sidewalls, if anything?
Well, what we do in a sidewall is to pull an electrical plate and probe with a screwdriver or something of that sort to see what's in there.
Okay.
And if there is nothing there, you can blow more in. If there's something there, you're pretty much stuck with what's there because it will keep additional insulation from blowing in around where it should be.
Okay.
Windows, you should have at least double glass, whether it's storm windows or sealed double glass is immaterial. It's better if you're putting in new windows, they should have low-E glass, which is a low-E emissivity. They are more efficient. The R value, which is the heat flow factor of a piece of glass, is 1. You put up 2 pieces of glass, it's 2. Well, that cuts your heat loss in half.
Okay.
If you put up low-E glass, it's probably about 3.
Okay.
There are some windows that are made that are much higher, like up about around 6, but they're relatively expensive.
Okay. How about the windows that have little mini blinds sort of built into them? Are those trouble-prone? Are they more energy efficient, or is it just a style consideration?
You don't have to dust the blinds.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. They are quite – they're at least an R2.
Okay.
So they are pretty good. Now, the one thing that you have to watch with them, you will find in those windows – there is either a set of little eyelets that look like eyelets in your shoes, mm-hmm. or at the top or bottom a little slit. And you have to be sure that those stay open. And there's a species of tiny spider that loves to build nests in them.
Ooh.
So you have to run a pipe cleaner through them or something like that once a year. Otherwise, you may get condensation between the two panes of glass. And that's what they're there for, is to vent moisture that gets between them.
Okay. Are they... more, I mean, we have some double-pane windows that are probably from the 70s that have lost their seal, and they do cloud sometimes. Since these with the blinds are vented intentionally, are they less likely to have that problem over time?
Yes.
Okay.
But the clouded ones are just as energy efficient as they were before they clouded. They just can't see out.
Okay. And then, I mean, you mentioned the air conditioners. The 10 years, does that apply to furnaces as well?
It depends. You can, a furnace man can tell you what the efficiency rating, in other words, the American Home Appliance Association has ratings of efficiencies.
Okay.
The new ones will go as high as 92%. The old ones may well be 65 or 70. How old is your furnace?
You know, I think it's in the 80 range somewhere. It was from 1988, and I think it might have been 80.
So I would figure it would be about 80%. So you're not going to get a really big jump in efficiency there.
Okay. Well, I won't take any more of your time. Thank you so much, and I really appreciate listening to you each month.
All right.
Okay.
Well,
thanks
for the call. Bye. We will just keep on talking with folks here. Next is Champaign line number 2.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I caught your comment about what you've done to your own home in terms of gutters, taking them down
mm-hmm.
and putting a line of something around the house. And we live in the country, and our gutters are always blowing off and getting in full of stuff. And so I was wondering, how do you build this gutterless system?
Okay. I dug a trench about 8 inches deep at the drip line off the roof.
Uh-huh.
And lined it with plastic, put a perforated, one of these common, ordinary plastic field tiles in it, and then covered it with washed gravel. That way anything that hits it stays on top, and the water goes through the gravel into the tile and out.
Okay, so it's an 8-inch trench at the drip line,
mm-hmm.
lined with plastic, and then plastic field tile put on top of that with gravel on top of the field tile.
Right. There is a diagram of it in the Building Research Council publication on gutters and downspouts.
Ooh, okay. Because we've been talking about trying to replace what's missing and how to get up there to clean and
I haven't cleaned a gutter in 10 years.
This sounds wonderful. So really the only one we'd have to worry about cleaning is the one that goes to the deck.
Right.
Because we couldn't put this system on the deck itself.
That's true.
Okay. Well, that sounds wonderful. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Mm-hmm. So so what you're doing is you're digging a trench, you're lining it with plastic, you put your tile on there, and you put wash gravel on that. Do you have to put, though, anything over the top of the tile just to make sure that you don't get a little bit stuff filtering into?
Not usually, because your wash gravel keeps that pretty much out. I mean, the gravel may be covered with leaves at some stage of the game, but they don't go through.
Okay. Joe, you never had any trouble with yours getting clogged up or anything like that?
No.
Okay. How long has it been on your house?
About 12 years, I think.
Pretty good. 12 years. Okay. And if people are interested in looking, they can get with the Building Research Council and look at the publications on gutters and downspouts.
And there's a diagram of it there.
How to do that. Okay, very good. Well, we'll continue here, but we're about our last 15 minutes with Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here every month. We talk about home maintenance, and your questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next up is Champagne, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I had a follow-up on that sewage in the basement. It occurred to me, my son said he plugged up that basement drain, and it still continued up in the stool and maybe even higher. Is there a way of check valving that further out?
Yes, you can, or many times people will put in a positive valve in that line where it's coming through the stool, so they have to close it. Yes, you can't use the toilet when that thing is closed, but it will prevent a backflow there.
So that a plumber in the vicinity would have good ideas on how to solve these problems, huh?
It should.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Next to this is another Champagne person, line number 1. Hello.
Hi. I have an old April Air humidifier, and we don't know how to use it, and we're just wondering whether or not it's really worth using, and if there are going to be mold problems, if we should get a new one.
My first question is, in the wintertime, if you reach out to touch a light switch or a doorknob, do you get zapped?
Well, we just moved into this house this year.
Okay.
And it's forced air heating.
Right. Generally speaking, I don't think most houses that are tightly built need a humidifier.
Okay.
If it is an old, leaky house where the curtains blow and the windows are closed, yes, you may. Mm-hmm. But if you have a new, relatively tightly built house.
The 1950 house.
Well, okay, you're probably going to need to do some weather stripping or so on. But rather than the big central power humidifier, I would get one of these cold fog humidifiers that you usually put in the kids' room when they have a cold.
A room humidifier?
A room humidifier, for the simple reason that it's not hooked up to the water supply. So that you have to consciously add water if you want to, because the number of houses that I have seen that have been done in by power humidifiers is legion.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you get a room humidifier and put it, say, in the living room, would you need to keep moving it from room to room?
No. Humidity moves throughout the house. We've done a lot of experimental work on that, and a humidifier or a dehumidifier located anywhere in the house affects the entire house.
All right. Okay. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And so you said your test of whether it was too dry in the house is if you get shocks. What would be your sign that the moisture level in the house, humidity in the house, would be too high?
Condensation on double glass.
All right.
So you work between the two. You have to realize that this little humidistat that they give you to control the power humidifier, if it's been in place for more than 6 months, is probably out of calibration anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you work on the basis of the condensation on windows or the static electricity that you're generating.
So if you get to the point where you don't have either of those problems, probably you're
in great shape.
You're okay. All right. Next is Champagne Urbana here, line number 2. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. This big old gas furnace draws air from the room through a square that was put there intentionally, and then on some very windy days, the wind blows right back down. Any suggestions? How much do those little whirly things cost? And can one put them up on the chimney without any problem? oneself.
Well, you the basic problem is, are you getting enough air? And you can put an automatic flue damper on the flue such that when the furnace is firing, it opens, and when the furnace is not firing, it closes. And if you have that kind of a situation, that perhaps is the best thing to do, because it will close it off completely when the furnace isn't firing, or at least enough so you can maintain the airflow from the pilot light. But yes, you can put those on, but I don't usually see them on furnace flues, because then they can carbon up and they may restrict airflow too much.
Okay. Let's go to Charleston, line number 3. Hello.
Hello. I'm redoing a room from the inside, taking all the plaster and everything down to the studs. Now, I want to go back and put insulation in, the walls and the ceiling. Now, the walls, do I put the insulation in and then put a plastic barrier over that?
Yes.
Will that tie back to be the same thing?
No. You probably ought to have just plain polyethylene, which is cheaper anyway.
Okay. Well, I already have the other box.
Okay.
And then the ceiling, there, it's in 24 centers.
Right.
Now I need 2 layers of insulation up there, correct?
Well, it depends. Do you have bat insulation there now?
It's rolled, that rolled stuff, but it's all chopped up, so I'm taking it all down.
Well, I wouldn't use bats. I would blow in loose fill insulation.
But that loose fill, it puts dust throughout the house throughout the years, I've noticed.
Well, there shouldn't be any way for dust to get from the attic into the house.
Oh. So assuming I do not do the blown in, could I put that full base sheets of insulation up there?
You could. Probably the least expensive thing to do is get some R38 bats.
And just crisscross them.
Well, that'd be going as one layer of R38.
I don't need 9 inches of it.
Well, that is about 9 inches.
Oh, that is? Okay. Now, what was that again? R31?
R38.
Okay. I appreciate your help.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. And when you're doing insulation, the vapor barrier always goes on the warm side?
That's correct.
All right.
You always want the vapor barrier on the warm side, which means the paper face goes down in the ceiling.
Uh-huh. Okay. To Urbana, next, line 1. Hello.
Just a thought for the person who was thinking about getting windows with the blinds on in between the panes of glass.
Mm-hmm.
You lose your privacy if when you open the windows, because then the blinds open up too. So something to think about.
Well,
that would be
okay. I'm on the basis that I haven't opened a window probably in 10 years, and if I had a choice, I would nail them shut.
Yeah, but you air conditioner far more than I think anybody should. So
well, no, I look at it from the standpoint that we do not have such a thing as fresh air in the Midwest. We have hot air, we have cold air, we have stinking air, we have humidity laden air, and that's what I bought a house for, is to keep that out.
Well, that's your opinion.
Yes, it is.
All right.
And I put up on my gutters, I have a combination. I put up gutter guards, GUTTA GUARD, which is simply a sheet of aluminum with a curved edge and special
clip. Right.
And in some places I adapted it because the gutter was up really, really high. We have really long runs of gutter. So I just ran a piece of aluminum, it's painted aluminum flashing from the next highest shingle so that the gutter guard wouldn't be sloping back toward the house. Now, the other thing that we did was an adaptation of what you have talked about. We didn't want to have downspouts at the ends of our gutter runs, and we were able to, because of the layout and with our house, to put in not French drains, but gravel. We have some gravel paths, and we did what you're talking about. We didn't put the tiles in, but we have the water coming straight down, and it either splashes onto gravel, which has sloped, dugout areas under the gravel, And we also bought, in one case, a nice big boulder so the water splashes on that and then runs down. And another time we got a nice
As long as the water is running away from the foundation, you're fine.
Yeah, but you can do some creative things is what, yes. part of my point.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what your house looks like. Thanks a bunch.
All right, thank you. We'll go next to another Urbana person here, line number two. Hello.
Good morning. Just tuned in. Didn't know if you covered the use of leaf blowers to clean out second floor gutters and any extensions and effectiveness of that. I would appreciate any comments you'd have. Thank you.
Well, they do work as long as you get the leaves before they get wet. You can use the leaf blower with the extension on it and curve and blow them out. But if the leaves get wet before you blow them, they're not going to go. So other than that, it works.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go to Indiana for another caller here, line number four. Hello.
Hello. I have an ungodly number of questions, so I'll just ask one of them. Have a oversized furnace, a gravity fed, that the work was done on it to check things out. And I can notice some improvements, but there's some things on it that I've never seen before, and I thought you might be able to tell me what one of them is at least. It's L-shaped, about probably 6 to 8 inches in diameter, fits out a window, which has been sealed by the person that did the work, has flaps on that vent. It comes back in, and the bottom of the L gets close to the floor, maybe a foot and a half off. And you can feel cold air coming in, and that sort of concerned me, but, you know, a professional did it. So I just wondered, it's almost like it's a balancing act going on between amount of air or something. I just wondered what that thing is and what...
Well, it's basically to provide air for the flame to burn.
Ah, okay. Well, so...
So, theoretically, it depends on how they set it up, but your flaps should close it when it doesn't need air. If we're balancing the air pressure between inside the house and outside.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay. Well, I guess that, but didn't really make, you know, go too many other steps. I looked at the flaps. They hang down, if you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they overlap on the top of each one. I've never seen them open, though I did put my hand underneath the opening of the pipe. It was a fair amount of air coming in, and that sort of surprised me. You know, if I didn't know work had been done in something and I found... air coming out of some place like that, I'd want to plug
it
out.
A fair amount of air goes up the flue when the furnace is blowing. And that's what you're replacing, and you have to have an air supply. If it was tightly done in a closet, there has to be two air intakes into a closet.
So before this was done, the furnace wasn't probably drawing proper amount of air for combustion?
Well, it may have been, but you say it's a gravity furnace?
The fellow told me, I didn't get to see him too much, he told me that, I won't say exactly what he said because he can't do it on the radio, but he said that's a pretty large, it's much too large for the house instead. He didn't know too much. I found out about it because he's asked me about the history of the place, and I've been here about 12 years, and I don't know even when it was built. It was some time ago, of course, and I know nothing about that.
Well, the gravity furnace is probably at least 30 years old.
Yeah, but he said it's a monster. He says it's too bad. He says you need a smaller one. I said, landlady's not going to do anything.
Basically, you need a more efficient one because that one probably has an efficiency down around 40%.
Yeah, he said that thing would definitely be below 50, and he wouldn't want to be the one to find out how far down it did go. Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. We're coming down here to the point we have a couple of minutes left. Anything in particular that you'd want to mention to folks to make sure that they might – something they might – should be doing it if they haven't done already?
Check your furnace filters. Be sure your filters are clean. That's probably the primary thing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an old, then look at insulation and see how much insulation do you have. Remember that insulation is rated in R value and the amount of heat loss is proportional to 1 over the R value. So this would mean if you have R20 and you doubled it to R40, you are changing from 1/20th to 1/40th, and that may or may not pay for itself.
Okay.
Because, you know, each inch of insulation is worth less than the previous inch, is what it boils down to. So we're trying to insulate well. The current standard is that we do want R38 at a minimum in the ceiling, and we want an R19 in the walls. That's what is required for new construction at this point. But they say be sure that your system is working well, and clean filters are a major part of it.
Yeah. If you have a dirty filter, can that actually reduce the efficiency of the furnace?
Yes, it can.
By something that's actually significant, so that if you left a dirty filter in there long enough, you would...
Yes, because you're not getting efficient heat transfer from the furnace. You don't have enough air moving past the furnace to pick up the heat. So you are, instead of a warm air furnace, you now have a hot air furnace. And that's not nearly as efficient.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Enjoyed it as always.
Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Once a month, he's here on a Monday. We take your questions on home maintenance. And AM 580 thanks Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors offers pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio and Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. The show, Focus 580, is also made possible with support from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Writer Natasha Tarpley's books for children have won many honors. Her themes include self-acceptance and connecting with the experiences of elders. She's also the author of a memoir titled Girl in the Mirror, Three Generations of Black Women in Motion. Tarpley will be talking this afternoon at the, she'll be talking tonight at the Champaign Public Library, but this afternoon she will be the guest on the Afternoon Magazine. Celeste Quinn is the host for the show, so you can hear that conversation in the 1 o'clock hour of the program. The show itself, the Afternoon Magazine, gets underway at noon here on AM 580 with the usual mix of news and weather and sports and other things. Coming up in the next part of this show, we'll be talking with writer and psychoanalyst Adam Phillips about his book Going Sane. He makes the observation that while an awful lot has been written about madness, very little has been written about sanity. And we'll be talking about some of the ways it has been defined in the next part of Focus 580. First, though, we'll break for news and update on the market, so stay tuned.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the markets, where we see soybean futures higher today, retaining their early price strength, firm cash basis levels, DCIT, weekly export inspections, and under